Blog Talk Radio.
Body, Mind, Spirit Radio, your live connection to the information for a healthy body, an enlightened mind, and a renewed spirit.
Good evening, everybody. Today is January 27th, 2016, and welcome to Yoga, the Ultimate Body, Mind, Spirit Guide with your host, Susanna Ran. I want to welcome you to a special episode of this wonderful show. Tonight, I will be joining your host to talk to her and ask her all the questions about yoga that maybe you don't know the answers to. Questions like, what is yoga? Does it really help you lose weight or become healthier? So stay tuned, continue to listen, and hopefully we answer some of the questions that you have been curious about. So without further ado, I would like to welcome your host, Susanna. Hi, Susanna.
Hi, namaste. Did you have any questions for me about yoga? What is yoga?
What is yoga? You know, I know a lot of people for the new year are really looking for some ways to become healthier, and yoga is a great alternative for that, but a lot of people don't know what it is. So what is yoga?
Well, most people think that yoga is exercise, and it does have an exercise component to it, but the reason why it is the ultimate body-mind experience, body-mind-spirit guide, is because yoga is the union of all those three parts of us, the physical body, the mind and the emotions, and then the spirit, which is always connected to the universe and always connected to each other. So most people think that they want to start a new year, maybe yoga might be what they're interested in doing. If they're a beginner, somebody who's never experienced yoga, a yoga class, a physical practice, then they're going to want to make sure that they go to a reputable teacher, somebody who's experienced, somebody who has at least a registered yoga teacher certification. It's not really a certification, actually, it's a registration. So most studios and gyms do require that their teachers, their yoga teachers, have some sort of a training. So hopefully, if people are looking for a place to go to, one of the places they might be interested in going to would be the Sports Club of Novi. We have lots of classes there, beautiful room, and lots of beginner classes. In fact, I teach a class called Healthy Backs. And in that class, we have people anywhere from maybe 45 to even 80, 85. And everybody comes in with their own complaint. Some people have shoulder injuries. Some people have wrist injuries. Some people have low back injuries. Just people coming in with pain. And what yoga has done for them is it allowed them to be able to break down their pain sensations into parts that don't even bother them because they're focused. Their mind is focused on relaxing and letting go and using the breath. The breath keeps the mind steady and calm. And using the breath is most important in the yoga practice, an asana practice. So they learn to be uncomfortable, but not in a way where it's bothersome. It's in a way where they feel themselves getting more comfortable in a very short period of time. And that's what keeps people coming back, that level of comfort that they experience when they let go, when they release something that they've been holding on to, whether it's a physical injury, but that always will have an emotional component to it. And when you relax and let go and integrate the body, the mind, and the spirit, then you experience yoga, even for a moment.
Awesome. You mentioned the body, mind, spirit connection, and I know we have a lot of listeners out there that are highly interested in the metaphysical, the holistic, and so forth and so on. Can you talk a little bit about that connection? Because you said that yoga helps with all three. And I don't really think that a lot of people understand that all three are interconnected. So what is your point of view on that?
Well, it goes back to the Sankhya philosophy, which is the oldest philosophy on the planet, that we are made of the five elements. And these elements interact differently: space, air, fire, water, and earth. Space and air, space is cold, air is dry, fire, of course, is hot, water is wet, and earth is like dust or soil or dry also. Anyway, the point is that our minds came from the universe. Our bodies came from the universe. Our spirit came from the universe. It was all at one point one. And then we had to go through a series of emanations, and we manifested into a physical form, which has a mind and cognizes things. But that mind is always connected to the universal mind. And the spirit is always connected to the universal spirit. So this is why when we talk about yoga being the ultimate body-mind-spirit guide, is that there are practices that you can do that will help, as I've mentioned before, leaving physical pain, but I didn't talk about emotional pain. And one particular, it's actually called a mudra, and mudras are hand gestures. And this mudra actually goes to your face, and you close off your ear. That little tragus is a little thing that sticks out next to your ear where your ear meets your face. So when you take your thumbs and push that in, you actually can reduce, obviously, the outside sound. And if you hum like a bee, then your anxiety goes away. It's the fastest way to reduce anxiety. There's no other method or drug or anything that will reduce anxiety faster than the Brahmari, which is the bee breath. People can look it up. There are many different YouTube videos of people doing it. It's called Brahmari, Bhramri, or you can Google the bee breath. But it is phenomenal for anxiety, immediate anxiety. So that's one of the things, one of the ways how the mind is affected. The mind is affected by calming the thought waves. And when you go into a yoga practice, a yoga posture, and your mind is calm and your body is calm, then that quiet is really what is renewing the spirit. The spirit gets stronger and brighter when the physical body and the mind are quiet. So that's actually what the intention is. Ultimately is that we would go back from our physical bodies and end up being back in spirit. And that is, this is what happened in meditation, and also, obviously, it happens in death. But a lot of people have experienced these deep levels of meditation where they actually, go beyond the physical realm. And it's. I've heard some people talk about when that happens. I want to talk about it now, but I don't want to mention any names, but somebody did tell me how the moment that in meditation when this golden globe settled down into them, that's when they could see what was reality and what was the physical world. So I hope that answers your question in terms of how it might affect the emotions and how it might affect the spirit. Singing, chanting, mantras go right to the vibration and affect your spirit. In fact, I've been going through this health experience, and I've been using the chant Om Gam Ganapataye Namaha, which means that it's about Ganesh, which is the destroyer of obstacles. Ganapate is Ganesh, it's a nickname. And he is the destroyer of obstacles, so when you chant that, you basically prepare the way for your success. And I use that chant also when I make ghee, clarified butter. When you boil away the impurities and what's left is the purest essence of any food source on the planet. Ghee is amazing. I could sing its praises from here to Kingdom Come. But so anyway, I hope that answers your question a little bit more about how yoga and the yoga practices of the physical, of the mantras of the gestures or the mantras, the vibration, the sound affects the body, the mind, and the spirit.
Yes, it does. And just for all of you guys out there that are listening, I know that you know so much about this. Do you find that if one is off balance, it creates an imbalance with the other two? You know, if the mind's off balance, you have a balance unbalance with the body and the spirit. You know, have you had that in your personal, life?
Oh, yes. definitely. I'm actually going through that right now, which I'll definitely will talk about at a later date. But if you are in pain, that can obviously affect your mood, your attitude, your expression. Anything can throw you off. Improper eating. And when I talk about the five elements and how they manifest into a human, space, air, fire, water, and earth, we call those the doshas. And I talked about that on the last show. It's actually on my website, www.yogatherapy-om.com. So basically the doshas are the balance of the five elements. Some people are more space and air, some people are more fire and water, and some people are more water and earth. And which means that if you're space and air, you tend to be very creative, you also tend to be very flighty, you're mobile, you could be cold. If you're fiery, if you're pitta, if you're fire and water, you're going to be obviously maybe a little more hot-tempered or sharp-tongued, maybe a little bit more critical, but you're also going to be very charismatic because you've got, high intelligence. And then if you're kapha, then, you're going to be more loving and attached to people and wanting to keep everybody happy and be very supportive of people. They're the nurturers. So all of these things are affected by everything. Let's talk about diet, for instance. If you are a vata person, which is cold and dry, if you eat cold, dry foods, that can be very aggravating. So actually cold fruit, dried fruit actually is not good, and cold, dry fruit is obviously not good. Ice cream is not necessarily good for vata, because they tend to be cold. But of course, on a hot summer day, in the Ayurvedic tradition, the ideal time to have ice cream would be 2 o'clock in the afternoon, which is between your meals, on a hot summer day. So, for instance, when we talk about the pitta person who's made more fire and water, they might find hot foods aggravants. So that can throw them off. That can make them even more hot-tempered or agitated. And it's often times that people who do eat those foods because they like them, they end up in trouble. They don't understand why they're getting GERD, acid reflux. And then there's the kaphas. If the kaphas tend to eat foods that are very heavy, and it just makes them heavier and more down. So what you eat affects you. The weather affects you. And when you are imbalanced, that's when illness manifests. And so this is where yoga comes in, and the yamas and the niyamas, the yamas being not being a violent person, trying to remain, more even-keeled, not lying to people because that creates disturbance in your mind, not spewing your sexuality around, being more celibate in your relationships and, fidel in your relationships, not stealing. These are all the yamas, and non-hoarding, not having too much, not having like 20 pairs of shoes, gym shoes and things like that. I mean, who needs to have all that? So those are the yamas. And if you don't have those, then you've got imbalances. And then the niyamas, the first one is sausha, is cleanliness. Cleanliness of the body and the mind, and that's by taking care of your temple, your physical body, taking care of your skin, taking care of your hair, taking care of your teeth, taking care of your eyes, your ears, everything, keeping yourself a good steward for that spirit that's in you. These are some of the things that yoga can help us with, and learning about Ayurveda a little bit, the science of life and how what we do and how we say things to people affect us, and how doing repetitive activities all the time you know, sitting at a desk all day and not sitting properly, which most people don't sit properly, that will throw you off. Your shoulders will round. Your rotator cuffs will get injured. You'll probably get carpal tunnel. And the simplest thing you can do is buy a ball chair. A ball chair allows you to keep your spine in extension, because if you don't, then you'll roll off. Or it just, you know, and it doesn't take too long to get strong in the low back using a ball chair. About 3 to 4 weeks. After the first 3 to 4 weeks of, you know, making yourself stay up and building that strength, then it becomes very natural. And that's the single most important thing you can do if you're at a desk job. So these are some of the things how, you know, how yoga and yoga techniques can help keep you more in balance when things go out of balance. So do you have any more questions?
Yes, I do want to mention to our listeners, Susanna mentioned one of her previous shows. The show that she was referring to was her November episode, and you can actually go to BodyMindSpiritRadio.com and listen to that show in archive, or it is on an archive on our Body Mind Spirit Network through Blog Talk. So I did want to put that out there. Let's kind of go into the physicality of yoga a little bit. Most people, like you mentioned earlier in the show, think that it's just physical movement. But you said that it also combines breath. So if I was going to come in for a yoga session and I've never done it before, what can I expect? What would I be doing?
Okay. Well, hopefully your teacher would start you in a kind of like a restorative posture. I like to start people, I don't know, they have a busy day, I don't know where they came from, I like everybody to be on the same page. So usually people will come and they'll come into either a child pose position, which I think is may or may not be good for some people, depending on your back situation, and or lying on their backs with their feet together and their knees apart, and their palms resting on their hips, and their elbows resting on the floor, and their eyes closed. That's a very comfortable posture. So if you came to a yoga class, you've never been there, and I just told you that, and you read it, wrote it down, that you lie on your back, feet together, knees apart, head down on the mat, palms resting on your hip bones, elbows on the mat, and just observing your breath. Just watch the belly rise as you breathe in, and watch the belly fall back down as you breathe out. And if you did this, even at home, practicing before you went, or even practicing in bed, because, by the way, this particular posture called Supta Baddha Konasana, reclining bound angle, with your hands in this mudra, this hand position, on the hips close to the pelvic area, making like a diamond shape, where the thumbs are touching each other and the index fingers are touching each other, so it's like a diamond, right over the second chakra, Svadhisthana chakra, which is your self, Svamin self. So when you have your hands there and your eyes are closed and you're just observing your breath, observing your belly rise on the inhale and fall back down on the exhale, the mind begins to quiet. It slows down the thought waves. And pretty soon, if you stay in this position and resist the temptation, because the mind is restless and it might want to get out, but if you can resist that, you will fall asleep. So people who have insomnia, if they stay in this posture and just observe their belly rising and falling and just follow one breath after the other and stay in that posture, they will go to sleep. In addition to that, they can also drink almond milk with nutmeg. Nutmeg, a little pinch of nutmeg, not too much. You don't want, nutmeg is a sedative, so you don't want to be, and it also can be a hallucinogen if you take too much of it, so we don't want to do that. So maybe like an eighth of a teaspoon is about all you would want in 8 ounces of almond milk, or, you know, if you're inclined, skim milk or goat milk, or sheep's milk, or whatever kind of milk. Warm it up. That'll also help you go to sleep. So anyway, getting back to your question about what to expect in a yoga class, like I said, if you want to You want to find yourself on the mat. You want to maybe come to a calm position. And your teacher should start instructing you in how to breathe a specific breath. And that breath is called the Ujjayi Pranayama. Ujjayi means victorious. And we use this breath to be victorious over the weaker mind that sometimes wants to get out of postures because they're A, restless or distracted or dull, you know, sleepy, lazy. These are all the different kleshas, all the different afflictions. And so with calming the mind and observing the breath and using this victorious Ujjayi Pranayama, then it helps you overcome the urge to run from sensations that are less than comfortable. So, for instance, and this happened to me, I'm a fitness professional. I started back in the 70s in the fitness world, got my degree from University of Michigan in kinesiology, science of exercise, and I've been working in the fitness field for a very, very long time. So I started into yoga in my late 40s, after a bout of allergic reaction to amoxicillin and meningitis, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, long story short, I was very weak. I went to my first yoga class, and in table posture, where your hands are beneath your shoulders and your knees were beneath your hips, I was shaking. And that had never happened to me before, that I had ever been in any kind of a physical posture of any sort. And I was teaching kickboxing and high-impact and low-impact aerobics, step aerobics, spinning. And I was teaching all these classes, even at this point that I came to this yoga class. And that really taught me something, that I had so much tension that I didn't even know that I had in my body. And also what happened to me one time, more than one time, is that when you have an emotional release in a yoga posture, you can cry. And it's a good thing, because they're really tears of joy and tears of release, lifting a burden from you. So these are some of the things that you might anticipate in a yoga class, that you might have a release. But nobody, everybody does, and nobody is looking, because everyone should be having their eyes closed anyway. So that would be the start. Is that the teacher? I did not instruct in the Ujjayi Pranayama. I can do that right now. It's a very important breath, because it's very important for your thyroid, to keep your thyroid balanced. So the Ujjayi Pranayama is an aspirant sounding breath, and I liken it to, if you were going to blow out the candles of your cake, to take a big breath in, you'd go like that. So if you had imagine that you're going to take a big breath in, that sound that you're making in the back of your throat to take that breath in is really the Ujjayi breath. And if you do that with your mouth closed, that take that big breath in with your mouth closed, then you're going to hear that aspirant ocean-like sound in the back of your throat. And then the exhale, if you were to blow, let's say you were going to clean your glasses, and you might and to fog up your glasses, that huh sound, if you did that and then closed your mouth halfway through it, then you'd hear that aspirant sound in the back of your throat as well on the exhale. So ah on the inhale and ha on the exhale with your mouth closed creates this aspirant sound, which gives you focus and allows you to keep your mind from wandering and also from reacting to sensations that are coming up when you're practicing the yoga postures. Because undoubtedly, the purpose of the yoga posture is to release tension in the body. And sometimes that release of tension, you're going to have some sensations. And I always tell my students that the sensations, anything above 5 on a scale of 1 to 10, anything above 5 is going to be obviously more challenging. But if they can stay with the breath and experience the sensation receding, then that is the use of a yoga breath with a yoga posture to yoke the mind and allow the body to release the tension in the body. But if they're in the posture and they're at a 5 and it's getting worse, then they need to slowly get out of the posture and relax, because you do not want to agitate your emotions. And if the pain or discomfort, let's call it discomfort, because, you know, pain is mostly sharp and we don't like to go sharp. The discomfort, if it gets worse, then it's going to disturb your mind, you know, because it's going in the wrong direction. So anyway, keeping the mind calm, you would back away slowly into a restorative posture or just, again, something that's comfortable for you, whether you're lying on your back or you're in a child pose with your head down and your knees apart and your feet together. So anyway, that's what you might expect in a yoga class, hopefully, and the teacher giving you cues of what to do next. Where is the inhale? What do you do on the inhale? What do you do on the exhale? A good teacher will teach you the breath and the movement. And the reason why, and it's a very challenging way to teach, because you have to be with the students every step of the way. Now, I know there's a fashion out there right now to put five or six postures together, teach it as one flow, and say, okay, go on your own. And, oh, by the way, if you don't get it, look at the person next to you. The problem is, yoga is about turning your mind inward. And if you're turning your mind outward to look at somebody else, you're not practicing yoga. So you might be in a yoga-like class that has yoga postures, but if you're instructed to look outside yourself, outside, open your eyes to look around, that breaks your inward focus and that defeats the purpose. So that I would, you know, I mean, especially if you're a beginner, I would definitely shy away from that class, you know, a class like that. Look for a class where the teacher instructs you. You know, the inhale, arm circle up, gaze past thumbs, or inhale, reach the right arm forward. That way you don't have to think. You can rest your mind and just follow. And my students have told me that when I teach this way, they are able to relax. And so as a beginner student, this would definitely be the way to go. Now, advanced students who know the postures and know the flow, and they can go into their zone because they're so experienced, then, you know, more power to them. If they don't need to look around them outside themselves, if they just have, because there are definitely some yoga practitioners out there that are like that, that they get the flow the first time and they don't have to, I mean, it becomes natural to them. But that's not the typical. That's more of the rarity, somebody like that. But of course, you know, there are people who, you know, who go to those classes all the time, and they become experts at it. But for the most part, most people coming into a yoga class, you're going to want to find a teacher that teaches you what to do next. What's the next breath? What's the next movement?
Awesome. You bring up a really good point about what to pay attention to as a beginner. Are there other things that you should pay attention to when going to a yoga class or, you know, registering for a yoga class? You know, some people will say, well, there's a lot of people out there that teach yoga and a lot of people out there that, you know, do yoga. You know, what kind of makes someone more relevant in doing the real art of yoga as opposed to somebody who maybe wouldn't be a good teacher or is maybe doing it wrong or not offering what they should be?
Well, so basically what you're saying is how can a novice decipher an experienced teacher who knows what they're doing from somebody who basically took a 12-week class and memorized things and is not really a teacher but more like an instructor? Is that what you're asking? Okay. Mm-hmm. Like I said, the teacher should obviously should greet you because if they've never seen you before, they should definitely introduce themselves to you because the teacher knows who the new students are. Even if they have very large classes, they can stand at the door and watch people come in. And if somebody they don't know comes in, the teacher should greet them and say, "Hi, you know, I'm so and so. I'm the teacher. What's your name? And do you have any issues?" That's basically what. That would be the first thing. So I would definitely notice if the teacher didn't do that. Okay. Now sometimes the teacher might come in late, and I am guilty of this, and I can't, you know, I don't see who is at the beginning because it might be dark. But if I see somebody new in class, you know, 5 minutes into class, I will definitely make sure that they're understanding my cueing, that maybe I'll stay closer to them. You know, I tend to cater to the new person. So that's another thing that you might want to look, you know, watch. You can go to a class and observe it, or you can just go to a class with a friend, you know. A lot of people like to take their friend and experience the class. So another thing I want to mention is that most people, even yoga teachers, don't even realize this, is how to stand properly, how to stand lifting up the sternum and allowing the spine to just lengthen and not tuck the tailbone under. There are a few postures where the tailbone is tucked under, and that would be if you're on your back doing a bridge posture, you could curl up and, you know, tuck the tailbone under. But remember, when you tuck the tailbone under, you're compressing the lumbar spine. If people who have herniated discs should not be tucking their tailbone under, even though they might feel that that's what makes them feel better. But because they're actually, you know, it's like, you know how your neck has a curve? It's like if you walked around with your chin on your chest all the time. That's kind of what tucking your tailbone under is. So if a yoga teacher tells you to tuck your tailbone under, it should only be like in that bridge posture or maybe a cat-cow where you're on your hands and knees in a table posture and you arch the back on the inhale and round the back like an exhale. That's a tuck of the tailbone. So, and then there's one more that I use, and that's when people are lying on their stomach and they're reaching back in their, let's say their right hand is holding, their right knee is bent, and the right hand is holding their right ankle, and their knees are next to each other. So you're stretching the quadriceps. To go deeper into the hip flexor, the iliacus, then you would tuck your tailbone under. So that would be another time that I would tell people to tuck their tailbone under. But that's about it. I don't know of any other yoga postures where you should be tucking your tailbone under. So that's what I would be cautious about. And whether the teacher is cueing, like I said, the breath and the movement. Another thing they might want to watch out for is a teacher who talks about themselves or talks about, just talks and talks and talks and talks and talks and talks. It's kind of hard to focus your mind and rest your mind on the breath and the movement if the teacher is just yapping away. So now some people have accused me of talking too much because I cue everything. I try to give as minimal cueing as I can. Three words or five words. I'll give you an example. For coming to Tadasana, the mountain pose, standing at the front of your mat. Inhale, arms circle up, gaze past thumbs. I've given the cue of what to do, what breath, what to do with what body part, circle arms up or arms circle up, and then what to do with your gaze, because in a yoga practice that has movement to it, you're going to want to focus your eyes on something. They call it the gaze or the drishti. So it's not looking all around the room and disturbing and the mind going outward. It keeps the mind focused inward when you have a drishti. So you're gazing at something. So, for instance, in the Ashtanga, which the sun salutations and standing postures, they all have a drishti, a gaze point. So I try to incorporate that also in my vinyasa classes because it helps people focus their mind. Now, for those of you who don't know what a vinyasa class is, vinyasa is kind of like modern dance. If you remember ballet, Ashtanga is a series of five different series, aspects. Actually, there's six series, I believe, primary, secondary, third, like that. And most people around here pretty much know the primary and maybe the secondary series. And it incorporates I mentioned the yamas, the ethical discipline and things like that, and not stealing and lying and you know, things like that. But also, it's the posture, asana. It's the breath, the pranayama, the breath practice, expanding the life force within the body and the mind. It's about withdrawing the senses, controlling the vibrations. It's about building concentration in the mind. It's about moving that concentration into a state of meditation. And it's about taking that state of meditation and going beyond meditation. It's turiya, it's liberation, moksha. It's when you know what's reality and what is an illusion. And that's really the ultimate purpose of a yoga, is to get to that level. So all this is not going to be explained in a yoga class, but it would be good if the teacher spoke about some of these things so that it's relevant. So basically the student is learning, what is yoga? There's so much. There's thousands of years of philosophy. We don't really need to be making up themes. I mean, you can have a theme. Okay, today's the theme will be the breath, or focus, or something, a concentration, or giving your energy to somebody in need, which is also a blessing and a wonderful thing to do. But there's so much yoga philosophy. There's so much to know that these little things can be mentioned in a yoga class. You know, when they're in a relaxed state, you know, I try to mention, you know, certain things about the mind so they understand what they're doing and why they're doing it. And this is what allows them to advance in their yoga practice. And they'll want to continue practicing and practicing at home and just practicing, observing their breath, sitting quietly. That's a wonderful way to build concentration, which leads to meditation. And you can just do this by sitting in a chair in a corner at home, maybe, you know, by a window or something, closing your eyes and just observing your breath going in and out your nostrils. And just, you know, and if your mind wanders, just bring it back to observing your breath going in and out your nostrils. And that's a wonderful way to build concentration, which leads to meditation. And by the way, meditation and yoga changes your genetic expression. What this means is you now have control over your genes. I'm going to say that again. You have control over your genes. And that control comes from what you allow to enter into your body through your mouth, your eyes, through vision, through your ears, sound, all of your orifices of learning, all of that. That affects your genetic expression. Stress. When we bring a lot of stress into our lives, we might not think that the violent TV shows are harming us, but they are, because they're imprinting, called a samskara, they're imprinting this experience in our mind, in our mindset, in our life experience. So every time you go and watch a violent movie, it's like you're experiencing that, and that's in your memory banks, and that creates an imprint. So that affects you. That affects your mind. It affects your spirit. So anyway, I've gone on, gone off topic a little bit. So I hope I gave you some clarity about. And there are some great teachers out there. I know I've had some really good teachers. I could give a shout out to Linda Kay. She's a great teacher. She was my first teacher. She's awesome. And that Tomaszewski, I've taken a couple of classes. I thought he was a really, really good teacher. So I don't want to give all the names out there. I'll save them for other shows. But anyway, there are some good teachers out there, and you need to just go and watch and see how the teacher behaves. If they're chewing gum, I would walk out the door.
I can understand that.
And if they let you chew gum, I do not let my students come in and chew gum. I mean, it's a hazard, you know. When you lift up and throw your head back, you could swallow the gum. But also, by chewing, it keeps the thought waves going. You can't quiet your thought waves when you've got chomp, 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 chomp going on. it's an extra action that you don't even need, and all the different chemicals and biochemicals that are needed for that action, and all, you know, it's definitely not quieting of the mind, which is the ultimate purpose of a yoga practice. Leaving a yoga practice feeling refreshed and not feeling jangled, or, because that's happened, or exhausted, where you have to sleep the rest of the afternoon, or you know, or you have to go to bed early because it was so exhausting, it was so vigorous, it was so athletic, it was so gym-like. So that's another thing, is that a lot of classes are trying to compete with the gym, which is ridiculous, you know, because, you know, they're not the gym. The gym is the gym, and the gym has its purpose, and a yoga studio and a yoga program has its purpose, and it's, you know, when I see teachers incorporate these gym movements into their yoga classes, it basically infuriates me, because they're, you know, they're denigrating it. It's not a yoga practice. It becomes an athletic practice, so don't call it yoga.
Well, that makes sense as well.
Mm-hmm. I just want to mention one thing. Wait, before you continue, that you mentioned my last show. Unfortunately, I ran out of time before I finished going through all of the different qualities of the different doshas, but it's very important that people know that you're not just vata, pitta, kapha. You could be vata, pitta, you could be pitta, kapha, but you could also be vata, mobile, pitta, sharp. And that makes you different than someone who's vata cold, pitta hot. So just because a person is vata and pitta together doesn't mean that you've got... So then there's so many different variations of personalities because of the different qualities. And so if they went on my website, they'd be able to take the test and find out what their dosha is and also what quality dosha. So you had another question for me?
This is an interesting question, and it's been brought up before, and somebody actually just brought it up in the chat room. So it's a question from one of your listeners. Have you ever heard that before you do yoga, you should not eat, that you should actually come
yes.
to do yoga on an stomach?
Absolutely. Well, for one thing, if you're digesting your food, you've got all these different biochemical things going on, all these different messages are going, so you're not quiet. That's the first thing. So you need to have actually evacuated. The ideal is 2 hours post-meal and having evacuated at least your bowel. You know, I mean at least the bladder, if not the bowel. But that would be ideal because, especially in the morning, you know, it's best to come if you on an empty stomach, having had a bowel movement, because, you know, there are certain, one of them is called, it's called Nali Kriya, and it's called cleaning of the pipes, and we do this in Ashtanga. It's where you're actually, here's another time where your tailbone is tucked, okay? This is the fourth time. Your hands are on your knees, and you're standing there, and your tailbone is tucked under, but you're supporting yourself with your hands. You take a breath in, and you exhale completely until there's no air left, and then you close your mouth and nose, and then you lift up your pelvic floor. Engaging those muscles are called the pubococcygeus muscles. And then you draw your navel against your spine. You create a vacuum, and you feel your belly strong against your spine, and then you push it out and in. You still have not taken another breath. You've exhaled completely. You've got a vacuum going on, and you push your belly out and in and out and in and out and in. And not only does it strengthen your abdominal muscles, gives you a really nice waist, but also helps, you know, with elimination. It helps with weight management. It also helps with depression. One of my teachers is Amy Weintraub. She's written several books, Life Force Yoga. She was actually Masters of Fine Arts, a writer, and she went through a very deep depression. She couldn't get out of bed, and what brought her out of bed was yoga, and she started with that practice of the Nali Kriya. And there's a couple of another practice I'll tell you about in a moment. And so she did the Nali Kriya. She said she would do Nali Kriya like four times a day because that drove her energy up, got her from out of the bed on her feet. So that was one of the things. Another thing she did, of course, she did the Brahmari. I spoke about the Brahmari breath because that's, you know, because anxiety and depression go hand in hand sometimes. And she practiced the Brahmari breath and the Nali Kriya. And then to get more oxygen, which she calls this prana pulling, it's known as Bhastrika. Bhastrika pranayama, one of the seven pranayams. I've mentioned already Brahmari and Ujjayi. So Bhastrika, you could be sitting in a chair with your elbows by your sides and your hands like open up by your shoulders, out a little bit, like a V. And then you just inhale gently, extend your arms out in a V and open your hands as if you're reaching for prana. And as you exhale, you draw your elbows back down into your ribs and you gently close your hands. And this actually increases your lung capacity by 3 times. This has been used very successfully with people who have COPD. And also it gives you a feeling of lightness in your chest. So if you're heavy-hearted, if you're depressed and your heart is heavy, you practice the Nali Kriya and you practice the Brahmari, but you also practice Bhastrika pranayama, and you will begin to feel better. So these are some of the ways that these simple yoga practices can help people in very profound ways.
That's awesome. And you talk about so many different movements and breaths. Do you know maybe a roundabout estimate and so forth how many yoga movements and breaths there are out there?
Okay, well, there are seven breath practices. Actually, there's a really good DVD that I really like. Vasant, V-A-S-A-N-T. Goes through all seven pranayams. He's got a particular one, Ujjayi, which is a little different. But he goes through each one, and he talks about, because he has a clinic in Mexico, he talks about all the medical benefits of each of these pranayams, these breath practices. And so he's a wealth of information. So for $15, if someone's really interested in learning about these breath practices, because these alone can send you into yoga. Yoga is the yoking of the body, mind, spirit. So even the pranayams can take you to that level of meditation where, you know, where you're totally calm and clear-headed and focused inward.
Mm-hmm. Well, we are getting down to about the last 10 minutes of the show.
Oh, yeah, I want to finish the question about how many pastors there are. Well,
okay.
Dharma Mitra did a poster, 908, but they say there's thousands. But there's a poster that has 908 on them. Ashtanga, I think it's 26, maybe, I don't know, more than that. I can't remember off the top of my head. The warm-ups, time salutation A and B, and the seated postures, and the standing postures. And then you've got the seated postures, which is really a primary series. And then you've got the closing postures, which goes on the front, you know, the front and back are the warm-ups and the closing postures. And the primary series, secondary series are basically in the middle. Those postures are, you know, they're seated postures. Anybody can do them. There are only maybe about 20 of them. We have to close the show. We're coming on. Oh, actually, we got some time here. We got some time.
Yes, we do. We have about 10 minutes left. So I would actually like to turn the show over to you and ask you, is there anything else that you would like to share about yoga that maybe, you know, a beginner or somebody who's never practiced yoga or maybe who's just starting to get interested in it should know?
Well, a lot of people like to go online and get yoga DVDs. Diane has, you know, some good DVDs that they can practice at home. And some people do like that. But also, you know, they might be interested in being with a group. They look around, you know, their churches sometimes, locally, there's a church that holds yoga classes, and that's probably less intimidating for them. Or a community center, you know, that might be less intimidating than walking into a yoga studio. Or, you know, as I mentioned, you can go to the Sports Club of Novi, you know, right there, right on off Novi in 10 Mile. And anyway, so that's it. You could start with a DVD, or you could start with, you know, a reputable club or studio or community center. And like I said, talk to the teacher, or maybe even go and visit the teacher beforehand if you're feeling, you know, a little bit intimidated, you're not quite sure. Or you can bring a friend, you know, something that's, you know, better, somebody who's never done it either. Just enjoy, just let go and experience yourself and observe. Listen to what your heart is telling you, you know, not your mind. Your mind needs to focus on the breath and the movement. But sometimes the heart, when you're quiet, reveals things to you. And I, you know, it's happened to some of my students have had profound experiences in their yoga practice, whether it was letting go through crying, or it was, you know, coming to grips with their sexuality, or maybe even deciding to get divorced, or having some life-changing event. All of these things could happen very easily in a yoga practice, especially when you have peeled away some layers and all the noise that's in your head all the time. When the mind quiets, then the heart speaks, and we must listen to our hearts, because that is our connection to God and to each other. So that's
awesome.
Basically it. And I don't know what else I could tell you today.
Well, thank you so much for taking this opportunity, you know, and taking your show and allowing me to interview you and informing all of our listeners out there at, you know, for Blog Talk Radio and Body, Mind, Spirit Radio about yoga and what yoga is all about. Before we close out the show this evening, Susanna, would you like to share your contact information if somebody would like to get a hold of you if they have any other questions for you?
Yes, absolutely. They can email me at info@yogatherapy, one word, -om.com. I have been out of the country for the last several weeks. And before that, and so I did get a little backlogged. So those of you that have emailed me, I will be calling you shortly. So you can email me again at info or Susanna, either one, at yogatherapy-om.com. Or you can go to the Contact Us page on my website. The website is www.yogatherapy-om.com. And that's why I try to keep everything, you know, pertinent. You can do the dosha test there and find out what your dosha is. You know, it's a pretty extensive one. That was the one that I got from my own yoga therapy training and my Ayurveda training. So, you know, it's pretty intense. It's pretty deep. But it does, you know, gives you some insight into really who you are. And it helps you, you know, understand yourself better, and also helps you understand other people better. Once you know, oh, they're like that. Anyway, so you can reach me again. You can also call 248-507-4008. Communicating with you about all things yoga.
Well, thank you so much, Susanna, and we greatly appreciate you taking the time to talk about yoga and what it can do for people on your show today. I also want to remind listeners, go to www.bodymindspiritradio.com, where you can listen to all of Susanna's shows in archive. So if you loved her show tonight, definitely check that out. The show she was just talking about was her November show, and it's an amazing show. So definitely check that out as well. And all of her contact information and so forth is also on her page, under Yoga, the Ultimate Body, Mind, Spirit Guide. Susanna, is there anything you would like to leave us with tonight, maybe a breath or something along those lines?
Yeah, just the chant, Om Gam Ganapataye Namaha. I'm saying Om Gam Gam Ganapataye Namaha. And what that chant is, the mantra, it's when you are in a, when you really need to persevere, and so to, you could just, you know, chant Om Gam Ganapataye Namaha, Om Gam Ganapataye Namaha, over and over and over, and that will take you through your obstacle. It'll knock that obstacle down and get it out of your way, and you will continue on getting better and better and better. So that's all I have to say. Om Gam Ganapataye Namaha.
Awesome. Well, that is an awesome way to leave out tonight. So on behalf of Body, Mind, Spirit Radio, we want to thank you all for listening. And join us next month, the third Wednesday of the month, for Yoga, the Ultimate Body, Mind, Spirit Guide. Until then, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Namaste.